Hi, everyone. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford. Sitting next to the one and only Wes Hodkiewicz, we're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field in Westward. Another day closer to Sunday, noon central kickoff at U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis. The Packers against the Vikings, a big NFC North showdown. And I think one of the themes, I would say, that came out of the open locker room session with the media on Wednesday with regards to this Packers team is a lot of reflection not only on the game-winning drive against the Dallas Cowboys when the Packers had to have it and got it, but also that being a follow-up to 2 weeks prior right. when the Packers did something very similar against the Cincinnati Bengals when they had to have a drive at the end of the fourth quarter and they got it for a touchdown to force overtime and win that ball game. Aaron Rodgers talked about it as this is a team that is understanding how to win. And when you're taking those steps and learning those types of things in the early stages of the season, that's a good sign.
Yeah, I really like that expression, the understanding to win, because you can look at Aaron Rodgers and Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb, even a guy like Martellus Bennett who won a Super Bowl a year ago. They've been in winning cultures. They've been in winning teams. But it is every year, as much as it sounds like a cliche, it is true that each team needs to learn their own identity. And it needs to learn how to win those games as a unit. That's something the Packers have really been able to accomplish so far this season, because until you get in that exact situation that they were in against the Bengals or the comeback against the Cowboys, you can rep that 100 times during training camp and rep those two-minute situations during practice. But until you're actually in that environment and that noise that's going around in the stadium is legitimate, actual crowd noise rather than, you know, speakers.
Right.
It's so difficult to actually put yourself in that situation and overcome those conditions, especially considering AT&T Stadium and how ruckus that crowd was.
Yeah, the first time the Packers had to do this against the Bengals, obviously it was at home.
Got home.
It was at Lambeau
right.
Field. You have the crowd behind you. A different situation, too, in that the Packers had between 3.5 and 4 minutes, they needed to go 75 yards. They were down 7 points. A field goal was not an option,
right.
whereas actually a field goal was an option in Dallas if you wanted to tie the game as opposed to try to take the lead. But the Packers, very methodical in the Cincinnati game, not only driving down the field and getting the touchdown to Jordy Nelson over by the pylon on the diving catch, but only left 17 seconds on the clock, which basically didn't give the Bengals any time to try to win the game going the other way, which mm-hmm. is then what the Packers did in Dallas when the Cowboys scored with, was it a minute 13,
yep.
I believe, which was plenty of time for Rodgers. So different situations, but yet in the big picture, very similar results for the Packers and similar learning experiences. And people wonder about that sometimes just because, you know, Packers have a lot of veteran players. They have guys who have been through this before, but every year you have players on your team who haven't necessarily been through this. They're young players. They haven't been in a lot of these types of situations. And it just, there's no substitute for that kind of experience when later in the year you know you're going to have to draw on it in some close, tight ball games.
Yeah, and I thought you did a really good job of illustrating the subtle differences between the two, whether it's the home or away, going for a touchdown, needing a field goal. But they're all quantified underneath that same category of a comeback, and you need to have that right mindset and that temperament to be able to really thrive in those conditions and adapt your skill set and mindset to what the situation is of the game. I know so many times we get the comments in Insider Inbox about, you know, comeback history and, you know, and what separates teams and players. But really, it does come back to, you know, finding your style, your play style. Mike McCarthy typically refers to it as the menu of plays that you have to choose from.
Right.
Those things are really fundamental. They're in the fabric of your offense, in your team. But you have to draw them out in those situations. I thought that's something specifically when you're looking at the Cowboys game, Rodgers was just masterful at understanding what he was getting from the defense and making the appropriate reads and calls. When you only have a minute and 13 seconds and one timeout, there's going to be certain restrictions that you have to deal with
yeah.
in the course of the game and making sure you are conservative with that timeout, making sure you get out of bounds when you have the opportunity. So I thought for Rodgers to orchestrate it was one thing, but for everybody, whether it's Martellus Bennett, you know, now in his 10th NFL season, or it's Aaron Jones in his first NFL start, being able to put themselves in that situation and find a way to really be able to get the offense downfield, to have that experience now, 5 weeks into the season, it's going to pay back huge dividends, I think, throughout the course of a year.
Yeah, I think the most impressive thing about the Dallas drive, when I look back at it, is just how efficient the Packers were with it, and that being that really there was only one gain. There were a couple incomplete passes, right, but there was only one gain in the entire drive that was less than double digits in terms of yardage. The one handoff to Jones that only went for 2 yards. Otherwise, it was 14, 14, 15. The touchdown was 12. The scramble was 18. The efficiency with which the Packers got down the field, nothing was a huge explosive play, but yet they just were steadily moving and really felt like they couldn't be stopped.
No, and really the thing you point out that's a good point is that when you're in a two-minute situation, incompletions are not your worst enemy. Back-to-back incompletions are your worst enemy.
Yeah.
I mean, when you start having negative plays working against you, I think that's why Rodgers right off the bat said for them to have that completion, 13, 14 yards, whatever it was, to Devontae Adams to start that series.
Right, the very first play.
Was so key to them being able to establish that momentum and get the chains moving and get things going in their way. I think when you look at it all, like at its top, this was probably the most complete performance I think this offense has had in terms of being able to consistently move the chains and not just rely on one giant big play to really get them in an end zone.
Yeah, I agree with you. And with that, we're going to throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkowitz in that one. And Wes, when you look at this Packers-Vikings matchup coming up on Sunday, statistically, as far as league rankings and whatnot, two things really stand out here. The Packers are third in the league in third down offense and first in the league in red zone offense in terms of converting red zone possessions into touchdowns. The Minnesota Vikings, first in the league in third down defense, fifth in the league in red zone defense. This is one of those matchups, one of those games where something's got to give.
Absolutely, and I think for the Packers' perspective, these first five games, that really has been, I think, as good of a start as you could have hoped for with as efficient as they've been. Also, keep in mind, 5 for 5 on fourth downs as well. So when it's come, even a couple of those instances where they weren't able to convert on it, they came back and still were able to get it on the following down, which indicates, in most cases, they had a short, you know, 4th and 1, 4th and 2 situation. Incredibly effective there. I think that's a credit to some of the stuff they've been doing with these tight ends. Some guys making some really clutch catches at times when they have had 3rd and long situations.
Yeah.
But you do look at the Minnesota Vikings, and we talked about it all week long, and you and I have talked about it in the past. This is one of the best groups in the NFL, and I think Mike Zimmer's one of the best defensive minds in this league right now. So it's that cat and mouse game, and as Zimmer even said, he wouldn't take any credit for the times he's had success against Rodgers. He says they've gotten lucky a couple times. But seeing how his defense really is able to match up with this Packers offense when they are in the red zone, when they are in those third down situations, I think is going to be one of the telltale signs of who walks out of there with the win.
Yeah, it's going to be the make or break moments of this game. I think what's worth pointing out here with regards to the Packers, with their third down success and red zone success, to throw a bunch of stats at you here, Wes. All right. Green Bay, 48.4% on third down so far this season. As I said, 3rd in the league, and 78.9% in the red zone. 15 out of 19 possessions in the red zone converted into touchdowns. And actually, they've also had 4 field goals. I don't think there have been any empty red zone possessions to this point. But what I looked back at is that really this success in those two areas is very much a carryover from last season. You look at the 8-game winning streak the Packers had that led up to the NFC Championship game. They were 45.9% on third down and 74.2% in the red zone during that 8-game winning streak. The numbers this year so far in the 4-1 start are very similar, actually a little bit better than during the 8-game winning streak. And Aaron Rodgers made, I thought, a really interesting comment on Wednesday. He gave a lot of credit to the planning, to the game plans in those two aspects of offense for the Packers' success. And he really thought that the situation the Packers were in last year with converting Ty Montgomery to running back and the injuries they were dealing with really forced a lot of creativity upon the game plans and the structure that they were going to take into trying to win these games. And he thinks that creativity has carried over in third down and red zone to the success this year.
Yeah, and obviously you have Spoff stats and info. I have my hypotheticals and my ideas And one of the things that stand out to me that I think is really this team is benefiting from in these situations is having a litany of different options. And a lot of those are cultivated. When you look at Ty Montgomery and the way they used him, obviously he's dealing with the rib injury right now.
Yeah.
But, you know, being able to motion him out of the backfield. They've done that still a little bit with Randall Cobb when Montgomery hasn't been on the field, trying to understand, you know, make the defense show whether they're in a man or zone coverage or see who exactly is trailing these guys. That can really spread a team out. And then you have the ultimate it factor with Aaron Rodgers, that if a team is able to plaster, if they are able to cover the receivers out there, that Rodgers can always squeak out too and make them pay if they send an extra rusher. So those are all things that you have to keep an eye on. But I think one of the reasons when I look at why they've been effective this year, there's just a lot of weapons that defenses have to cover. And when you do have Martellus Bennett that you have to keep an eye on in the middle of the field, you've seen Lance Kendricks make some really big catches. Having a probably more weapons at tight end, I think, is something that's also making Jordy Nelson, Devontae Adams, and Randall Cobb's job a little easier as well.
Yeah, when you look at Minnesota's defense in terms of, okay, so how are they so good on third down? They're first in the league in third down defense. I believe they're only allowing something like 25% conversions by opposing offenses, which is tremendous third down defense. Aaron Rodgers talked about it in terms of the experience that the Vikings have, particularly in the back end with their secondary. Trey Waynes, as a third-year cornerback, is the youngest player in that secondary. It's a very experienced group. They've been in Mike Zimmer's system for a number of years now, which is exactly the type of defense Mike Zimmer wants. And what the Vikings do a lot on third down is they do a lot of disguising.
Yes,
they know, they know what they've put on film, and they will come out and look like they're going to run something that they put on film in other games, but then at the snap, they morph into something else completely to try to confuse the quarterback, to try to catch him off guard. Rodgers even admitted, against a Mike Zimmer defense, sometimes they're going to get you because they will disguise it well enough that you can't react to their changes fast enough, and that's what makes this whole chess match coming up here on Sunday so interesting.
Yeah, and Harrison Smith sort of shoved that aside a little bit when he was asked about the continuity back there and how that factors into their ability to disguise and communicate. But Jordy Nelson made it very clear when he was talking in his locker, he thinks there's a big connection there with how long a lot of those guys, they have a lot of homegrown players on the defensive side of the ball. They do have Linville Joseph and obviously Terrence Newman, some guys they have signed and brought in. But for the most part, these are guys now in their third, fourth, and fifth NFL season that have played together for a long time. Knowing each other and knowing those tendencies is ultimately what allows you to disguise and not give anything up pre-snap. And that's huge when you look at a battle against Aaron Rodgers, who really thrives off that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, they call third down the money down in the NFL, and it is definitely going to be where the money is on Sunday. But with that, we're going to throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford right here, Wes Hodkowitz over there. And Wes, one thing we definitely need to touch on that we haven't gotten to yet, and that's the great Jordy Nelson mystery injury from the final drive in Dallas. We found out on Wednesday that he was on the sideline and not on the field for the final drive because he was being evaluated for a back injury. No more specifics given other than that. But Jordy Nelson was back at practice on Wednesday, was a full participant in practice, told reporters at his locker he has no concerns about it whatsoever. He's planning to practice fully all week long and play on Sunday. So the mystery has been solved or revealed, and apparently it's nothing to worry about.
I'll say this, Mike, and probably all my time on the beat, I don't know if there was a bigger mystery for something that just ended up being that resulted in a full participation in the first practice after the game. So everybody can, you know, breathe a collective sigh of relief. Jordy Nelson said he's feeling fine and now has his eyes on this game Sunday at U.S. Bank Stadium.
Yeah, and looking at that interview at Nelson's locker, there was also an interview at Devontae Adams' locker on Wednesday, and those two guys sporting a new T-shirt that stemmed from the whole bobsled celebration thing that we had talked about on our last show. Apparently an apparel company quickly printed up some T-shirts with a depiction of their bobsled celebration and, you know, overnighted them to the locker room or whatever. Those guys had them before practice even started on Wednesday, right?
Yeah, pretty remarkable. I mean, so the game, it happens, you know, Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening. by Monday, they already had reached out to Davante Adams. By Tuesday, they talked to him. And by Wednesday, before practice at 12:45, they were already waiting for them at their lockers. So this thing caught on quick. And the Packers, we talked about this in yesterday's show, you know, they've really embraced this idea of the touchdown celebrations, and the expanded group celebrations. They think it's a good opportunity for them to really, you know, express themselves and have a little fun, too. This has brought out even the best out of Jordy Nelson, who is, you know, in the past has talked about his not really big on celebrating, but he said, you know, when you're not just dancing around by the pylon by yourself, there's a little bit more fun to be had. And so he drew up this bobsled celebration. I would say this week's game against the Minnesota Vikings probably pits the two teams that have gotten the most national attention out of this so far, with the Vikings having their gray duck/goose celebration in Monday Night Football.
Yeah, well, and we found out from Jordy Nelson, too. It sounds like he's a little miffed because the Packers maybe had a little duck-duck-goose thing in their back pocket that they maybe wanted to pull out later on, and now that's kind of been scuttled because you can't copy somebody else, right? So you have to scrap that one, don't you?
Maybe. I mean, technically, if the Packers do duck-duck-goose, is it different than duck-duck-gray duck?
I think it's going to look exactly the same. Although I will say, I heard somebody say, something with a microphone that was near that Viking celebration that the Vikings player said goose, not gray duck.
Oh, well, there's mystery solved.
Yeah, so I guess it's a personal preference thing, a geographical thing. I don't know.
And maybe if the Packers do it, they could actually perform it correctly. I mean, the Vikings, the guy tapped the guy, and then like everybody got up. I mean, that's not how it works.
Yeah, it's not supposed to work that way.
That isn't how it worked when I was in preschool, but maybe times have changed. I don't know.
Well, and the other thing we found out too is it sounds like Trevor Davis, who hasn't been a part of these celebrations just yet, but he's thrown out some ideas that have started to become incorporated here. So maybe if Trevor can get a touchdown, we'll see some even more extended creativity.
Yeah, you would think he probably has one saved in his back pocket for a punt return or potentially a touchdown catch.
I like that idea.
But he did say, I should say, Davante Adams said Trevor Davis has been the main choreographer so far, for a lack of a better term. He credited him to his lunchroom celebration that he had against the Bears, where he was kind of dishing out food, serving out food to everybody. So,
okay.
Packers have taken this. They really ran with it. And as Jordy Nelson said, they have a lot more up their sleeve. So we'll have to wait and see what's next.
Well, let's hope they get plenty of opportunities to show what they've got up their sleeve. And with that, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford sitting alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, all right, I need to throw a question, a hypothetical at you.
Ooh, okay.
Vikings have two significant, I would consider them significant streaks heading into this game. One is that pass rusher Everson Griffin has at least one sack in every game so far this year. He's got six on the season, at least one in each of the five games. And also, the Vikings quarterbacks, whether it's Sam Bradford or Case Keenum, neither one has thrown an interception all season long. So I pose to you, which of those two streaks do you think is the most important for the Packers to break in order to win on Sunday?
Definitely the interception, in my opinion, because I think particularly when it relates to Case Keenum, his game is really predicated on being able to take care of the football. If you can turn him over, and he hasn't done it yet this year, Mike. I mean, he hasn't even had a fumble loss. So,
wow.
If you can turn him over, I think that's where you really can start to get some momentum against him. That's historically been the way it's been. I mean, you could look back to the Rams last year. I think he got off to an okay start, and then the turnovers started coming, and then next thing you know, it obviously gets turned over to Jared Goff. So I think if you can break that one, 121 passes he has right now in the season without a pick. He has a 97 passer rating. He's been good. He's been less than good. So I'm very curious, again, as we've alluded to in some previous episodes, to see which Case Keenum shows up should he start. But regardless if it's him or Bradford, and likely it'll be Keenum, I really think it's going to be more important for the Packers to get that interception and start to get their momentum built for their defense, and also really hurt that Vikings offense, which is really based around being able to protect the football, win the turnover battle.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that you chose that, because I'm going to disagree with you, and I'm going to say actually I think the Griffin streak is the one that's more important for the Packers to break. I say that because to me, if the Packers don't turn the ball over, I don't see them necessarily needing a turnover on defense in order to win the game. But that being said, when I look at Packers games on the road in loud environments and whatnot, that where the offense has struggled, where things have started to go haywire a little bit, to me, it's when the other team's pass rush starts teeing off, the Packers offensive linemen maybe have some communication problems dealing with the noise, the snap, the silent count, you know, all that kind of stuff. Things start to go off the rails. I think of the Fail Mary game in Seattle with all the sacks in the first half where things were just going wrong. There have been games in the Metrodome against the Vikings where things have looked that way for stretches and the Packers have really had a hard time overcoming them. You look at last year's game, the first one at US Bank Stadium, the Packers and the Vikings, Aaron Rodgers, you know, got the ball knocked out of his hand a couple, three times, that those ended up being very big plays throughout the course of the game. So maybe it's overstating it to say you can't let Everson Griffin get a sack, but I just think the pass protection in games like this on the road, the noisy environments and everything, I think that's what it really comes down to for Aaron Rodgers to be Aaron Rodgers.
14 games Everson Griffin has played against the Green Bay Packers. How many sacks do you think he has?
I'm going to say 4 or 5.
It's actually 9.
9.
So, and I think there's a couple multi-sack games in there as well. But
wow.
The thing is, and you and I talked about it when we were previewing the Vikings, I mean, this is a young man who's really developed.
Yeah.
And from where he started to where he is now, he's a primary playmaker. He's a difference maker, as Dom Capers always likes to say when he's looking at a defense and the two or three guys that really stand out. So, yeah, I agree with you from that regard that it is going to be, you know, important for them to shut down Griffin, but also make sure that the pass rush doesn't get home. Because I think a lot of things that they do on the back end and that secondary is based on being opportunistic and being able to capitalize on some of those things that the pressure packages generate. That's typically been the way Mike Zimmer's coached, and we'll have to see how it turns out on Sunday.
Yeah, definitely. But with that, we're going to call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, you can find him at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.